This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Ooh, is it that time of the week already? Blimey, no wonder Keith's looking so cheerful. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. Because I don't do much this hour. That's why I like it so much. You ring in with a question, we engage in a little bit of banter, and then someone else rings in with an answer. We engage in a little bit of banter, and then we decide whether or not the answer is definitive or not. And we decide whether or not the answer is definitive or not by scrutinising your qualifications. Now, don't think that you actually need to bring your certificates. You might just have seen it on the telly last night. So if someone asks a question like, why does da-da-da-da-da-da, you watched David Attenborough last night, you can just ring in and say, I say qualifications, you say, oh, I watched David Attenborough last night. This is the only thing I have to make clear. Sometimes people genuinely seem to think that they have to bring academic qualifications or vocational qualifications. No, when I say what are your qualifications, I'm just asking, how do you know that? How do you know it? Of course, if your qualifications turn out to be breathtakingly relevant to the question that you are answering, then you might well receive the highest accolade that British radio can bestow. A Ray Liotta, named after the Hollywood legend that is Ray Liotta. And the reason I say it like that is because I spent quite a long time saying a Ray Liotta, and many people thought that it was an aquatic mammal based in Essex. And there was an awful lot of confusion. I'd often get asked about this when I'm out and about. They say, what's a Ray Liotta, James? We've got a T-shirt in the offing. Balcony Shirts in Uxbridge have made a T-shirt, but I think we're going to save it for when the board game is released later this year. But the cleverest thing about Scott's T-shirt that he's done for us is a thing of genuine beauty, actually, is that the kind of coat of arms for Mystery Hour that he has created contains an otter. Which is going to undo all the good work I've done by starting to pronounce Ray Liotta correctly. I hope someone gets one after all that. Otherwise, people who are only listening in for the first time are going to be left wondering, what the hell is he on about now? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456260973 is the number that you need if you have a question, or indeed if you hear somebody else ask a question to which you have an answer. We're sort of flirting with a lifting of the ban on motoring-related questions at the moment, but it's a very gentle flirtation. We've had some embarrassments lately regarding roundabouts, but I am no longer... I mean, I'm generally a more mellow human being in every way than I was when Mystery Hour started. But also, I don't feel the need to constantly enforce my own slightly weird prejudices. This is, in many ways, what my latest book is about, How Not to Be Wrong, The Art of Changing Your Mind. So I decided, for whatever reason, probably because I learnt to drive so late and I was a little bit embarrassed by it, therefore I constructed this characteristic that involved me being very negative about motoring-related issues. The stronger your feeling is in an irrational way, the more likely it is that you're projecting. So why did I hate on motorists for so long? Answer, there'll be two answers to it. A, partly talk radio, phone-in radio, historically went the opposite way, and I have this weird compulsion to swim against the tide. So, I also quite like cycling, but of course, if you want to do a radio phone-in 101, then give me a ring and tell me why you hate cyclists is always a good one, and that involves loving motorists. Driving around in a ton of metal is absolutely brilliant. But I couldn't drive. I didn't learn to drive until Mrs. O'Brien was pregnant with our first child, and I thought at the time, quite unreasonably, insisted that she wouldn't be able to drive herself to the labour ward, so I had to get myself a licence before her waters broke. And I did. But I still had that legacy of being negative about motoring. Why am I doing this? This isn't a therapy session. This is Mystery Hour. Let's start, please, for God's sake. Bahram's in Romsey. Bahram, question or answer?
A question, James.
Carry on.
I'd like to know how they design Sudoku puzzles. They normally prime the grid with numbers, but I'd like to know, how do they know if they left enough logic in there to be solved?
Well, they start with the finished one.
I've tried that. I don't think that's quite the right answer, because you could remove numbers.
Yeah, but that's what they do. They start with the finished one, and then they remove numbers, checking all the time that it's... No?
But I'm not sure if you remove numbers, you might remove some of the logic with it.
Yeah, but they make sure that they don't. So they're constantly doing... I don't know. Why am I trying to answer this question? I haven't done a Sudoku for about 10 years, Bahram, and you're obviously a bit of an expert, and here I am trying to lecture you on them.
No, I'm not an expert.
You've tried to make your own. That makes you quite an enthusiast.
I did a few on lockdown, and there was one particular one I got really stuck and wondered whether there was enough logic in it.
Oh, so you think they might have made a mistake?
It could possibly be, but, you know, that's why I wondered whether, you know, the logic might disappear unintentionally.
Yeah, I don't know that the answer to the question of how they make Sudokus will necessarily give you the tools that you need to decide whether or not the one you got stuck on during lockdown was actually flawed in some way. I've found a mistake in a crossword once, and I was working on a newspaper at the time, so I checked, and it was actually a mistake. But but we shall find out. How do they make... What's the plural of Sudoku? Is it Sudoki?
Oh, you're really testing me.
How do they make Sudokus? Sudoku. I've probably said it wrong. Sudokis. I love that. Barab, take care. How do they do it? How do they make them? I do not know. 0345-6060-973. Jim's in Watford. Jim, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Jim.
I'm not going deaf, but I'm finding myself relying more and more on the subtitles facility watch live programmes or, you know, films.
You probably are losing your hearing a bit if you are deaf. I'm sorry, it's not medical now. I mean, you might... Nearly, mate, nearly. Carry on.
They
so nearly got me then. Yeah, well done. Oh, you're brilliant. I'm here all week trying to feel.
But it's particularly, I find, American accents.
Yeah.
I do also think that the quality of sound recordings on a lot of programs are very, very poor.
I think you're right.
I do find myself turning to the subtitles. So, question is there somebody typing it that quickly, or is it voice recognition? How does it get in, particularly for live broadcasts, where it is immediate?
Yeah, wow. Well, I mean, all of the above is the short answer, because recorded programs would have been done differently. It's why one of my favourite things about being in the studio sometimes is when you get the live subtitling on news programmes and political speeches, and they make hilarious mistakes. But you want to know is whether it's software or human, do you?
Yes.
Okay. So because the recorded stuff, they will edit it afterwards. So if it was a computer, they'd change it, wouldn't they? Before it went out, they'd be able to say, That's not an aquatic mammal from Essex. That's a Hollywood superstar. Why have you spelt it like that? That's a really good example, actually. That could easily appear on a subtitle as an otter from Rayleigh rather than Raymond Leota. So, I don't know. And it may have changed. I mean, it would have been people to start with, because subtitles predated technology. But whether or not they use... Do you know, here's a weird thing. It's a really weird thing, given what we've just done. We discovered some software during lockdown. I was transcribing stuff for my book, and the actual software we discovered is called Otter.
Good Lord, that's crazy.
Shivers down the spine. Whoa! But it's utterly irrelevant. So that does what you describe. That transcribes. Wish I'd had that when I was a newspaper journalist. But it transcribes interviews. But what they do on subtitles, we will find out for you. Someone will know.
And it's how it copes with accents.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that again, I like these questions a lot. I mean, in live, strong accent, you'd imagine would present bigger challenges to a computer than a human. I don't know, but we'll find out. Yes. Who does the subtitling? Yes. How does it work? We want chapter and verse on this for Jim's benefit. Jim, mind how you go? 12 after 12 is the time. Sarah is in Nebworth. Sarah, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Bit of a bizarre one. My daughter has this irrational fear of spiders, which many do, so I often get called into her bedroom, bathroom, wherever. Get this spider! Oh, they panic. So if they're downstairs, I'll go and put them out on a bush or whatever. But if they're in her bedroom and she's panicking, I will put them out the window.
Yeah,
and I just wondered if when I throw them out the window, I don't throw them out the window, I put them out the window, do they die if they hit a roof or the pavement, or are they going to be okay? Because I don't want to kill them. So can someone tell me if they survive or not?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be patronising, Sarah, but haven't you ever seen Spider-Man? The spider will shoot a web.
I love Spidey.
The spider will shoot a web out and catch onto some handy promontory before it hits the... No?
Do you reckon as quickly as I have to throw
probably
them out of
not.
My daughter's bedroom? I don't think
probably
so.
Probably not. So, I mean, it's going to depend slightly on the size of a spider. I imagine if you lobbed a tarantula off a 13th floor...
Well, fortunately, we don't have tarantulas in Nebworth.
No, but they are... Yeah, all right, clever cogs. They are, however, spiders. I mean, you know, that's just making
that's
the
true.
Point.
And I know they have an exoskeleton, but I worry every time I put one out the window that it's going to be okay.
I love this. Would your daughter care? Would your daughter be happier if you killed them?
She doesn't like killing anything, but if it came to a spider
how old is she?
Well, she's 16 now, she's had this
when she was younger.
Fear.
So something has to die.
She's fine with elephants. She's fine with any other
animal.
How
often does she find an elephant in her bedroom?
Well, we did go and live with some elephants in Thailand when she was four. Not many elephants in her bedroom, although she'd love one.
It would be nice. But, I like it. Get you an answer. What a lovely question. I've never thought of that. And I don't know. There's going to be lots and lots of variables, as in how far it falls, how big the spider is, but I don't know. You lob it. So a normal house, let's say the second floor of a house, the first floor, one up from the ground, normal-sized house. Bedrooms upstairs, normal size spider, household spider, likely to be found. Open window, throw out spider. Will the spider die? 03456060973. 12:15.
This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12 is the time. How do they make Sudokus? How do they do the subtitles? And if you lob a spider out of your daughter's bedroom window, will it die? All begin with S, all the S's, three S's. Sudokus, subtitles, spiders. James is in Merseyside. James, question or answer?
Hi, it's an answer.
Carry on.
Generate the Sudoku puzzles, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. So,
really?
You use a bit of software that's got two parts to it. It's got one part that, randomly fills in the grid and then takes away one digit at a time.
Yeah.
And then the other part is programmed with all of the logical steps that a person might use to solve a Sudoku puzzle.
Yeah.
And every time you remove a number, that solver then has to try and solve it. And if it can't, obviously, you've broken it.
Yeah.
And if it can, then you could potentially remove another number.
And that makes it highly unlikely that an unsolvable Sudoku would escape into the wild. Like a virus from a Wuhan laboratory.
Don't get me started on that one. It essentially makes it impossible, because if the solver can't solve it, it just re-adds in that last number.
Puts back the original, the last number removed. Qualifications?
I'm a software engineer and I made a Sudoku problem generator a few years ago because I was bored.
Not for commercial use then?
No, private. I was working on an oil rig at the time and had a bit of time twiddling my thumbs, so I wrote it.
I think I'm going to have to give you one, aren't I? I don't know how hard it is to do. Can you tell me honestly how hard it is to make a Sudoku generator?
To sort of get one that, kind of works, took me a couple of nights, and then to get it working really well, I think I spent a few more nights on it, so it was about a week's worth of work.
And how good are you at this? I mean, how many...
Programming?
Yeah.
I'm a senior software engineer for quite a big company.
So if you mess up, what's the worst thing that could happen?
We could lose millions of pounds or get in trouble from the regulators.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give you one. Partly because I've bigged it up so much and lots of people listening will be wondering what it is, and we've built up the anticipation and the excitement. But also partly because, I mean, what better qualification could there be than actually having made a Sudoku generator than as you have done? And ideally, if you'd invented Sudokus, I suppose, you'd be assured.
I can't quite claim I've done that.
Well, I think that's good enough. Would you like an aquatic mammal based in Essex?
Oh, absolutely. I think that'd have to go on my CV.
Go on, man.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Oh, thank you so much. That has actually made my day.
And the extra round of applause. Nice work, James. Love it. And there you go. Pretty good. So, Baran, mate, you are doing something wrong. Highly, highly unlikely that you have... And I'm so old, going back to when I spotted a mistake in a crossword, I would have been all done. I mean, I know there are still brilliant crossword writers because it's an art form. But the obvious ones, the non-cryptic ones, probably are now done by computer. Ben's in Camden. Ben, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. Question, please.
Carry on, Ben.
Okay, so there are a wide variety of accents in the UK, and each one requires different facial muscles and movements to pronounce them. So the question is, can you tell where someone's from in the UK by the characteristics of their face?
Who would be able to tell us? Probably somebody hard of hearing?
Don't know. Maybe someone who's well-travelled, who's noticed different characteristics.
I don't think you would. I think if you could hear the voice.
Lower jaw more or whatever it may be.
If you can hear the voice.
Heard about Magpie, the vegan pie truck that needed a bit of help from GoDaddy. One day the owners are like, this business hasn't reached its potential. And the other one goes, we need a bigger piece of the pie. And then it hits us. We need GoDaddy. Look, we can get a domain name and create an online store so we can sell to more customers. Now they've gone from serving a couple of pies to flogging nationwide. And now everyone's like,
vegan pies are the new thing around here.
Wait, no meat. For all the help and tools you need to grow online, GoDaddy.
You'd not notice enough, I don't think, the facial contortions. That. What an amazing question. I love accents. I find them enduringly fascinating for a whole heap of
reasons. Yeah, and I think for such a small country, we've got a massive variety.
We do,
so I think
we?
It's particularly pertinent to ask it of the UK.
Hey, they do that, don't they? Yeah, so I reckon I could spot a Liverpudlian accent from 100 miles away, actually. But I don't know
so
whether
maybe the Liverpudlian one, maybe they use their cheek muscles a lot more. You know, when you visualise a Scouser speaking, maybe, you know, they're working their cheek muscles a bit more. So that's really what I'm driving at.
The Black Country where I grew up, there is a theory that that accent is linked partly to the fact that the air was so dirty, so you move and breathe a bit less. You know, you don't have big, wide open breath. So it's all right, that is. You don't move your mouth that much, and it's quite nasal because your nose would normally be blocked.
Maybe it's more physiognomical. Maybe just because of the way that you work your mouth in order to make the sounds over the decades rather than something historical or genetic.
I love this question. Whether it's answerable or not, I don't know. I mean, I suppose one person might ring in and say, yeah, I can do it, in which case the answer to your question is yes, as long as we trust them and believe them. But it'd be interesting if there were a more formal way of confirming it, wouldn't it? Why do you want to know? Just curiosity.
It was just one of those things, you know, when you drift asleep at night and those, you know, last-minute thoughts of the day. Yeah. And I thought, bloody hell, I'm going to have to ring in and ask.
And here you are. Let's hope we can get you an answer. Thank you, Ben. Phil's in Southwark. Phil, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you.
Carry on.
It's to do with subtitling.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a number of ways that subtitling is done. And I think the most interesting one is the live subtitling.
Yes.
And it's done a number of ways, I mean, partly by stenography, as in a courtroom.
Oh, same in a courtroom. So someone with particular skills and training is typing out the verbatim words that they're hearing
exactly.
And that goes straight onto the screen, which is how those funny mistakes can happen.
Well, the funny mistakes, and they can be hilarious and quite traumatic when you're doing them, is that we have what we call a re-speaker. And that is someone with headphones listening to the program live, speaking into a microphone, enunciating properly and inserting all the colours of the subtitles and the punctuation live straight onto air using voice recognition. You couldn't use voice recognition straight onto the interviewee's voice, for instance,
right,
because you've created a voice model which recognises your voice. You can prepare for the for an interview by kind of second guessing what kind of words and language they're going to use, but sometimes you are hit with completely bizarre technical sort of idioms and things which come out hilariously on screen.
Do you have a favourite? Because I sense this is something you used to do.
Yeah, I did it. Well, off the top of my head, I was thrown into a program, a live program, which was, we didn't have anything prepared for it. And it was all about bed bugs in the Northwest. There was a plague of bed bugs in the Northwest. I hadn't prepared bed bugs, and it came, every time I said it, it came out differently. So you would get this bloke saying, I came into the room and my bedroom was full of dead dogs. It came out because it didn't recognise.
I've heard this before. I think I've heard of that. I think that's on one of them.
Well, that was me. That was me having claimed that one.
Happy days. I think we.
Another one was a program. It was on the news channel. It was completely unscheduled, and it was all about what's her name, Lumley, Joanna Lumley, sticking up for the Gurkhas.
Yeah.
And they were reporting from a village up in the mountains, and they said, "This is." Whatever village was, Land of the Gurkhas. and it came out on screen as Land of the Gay Vicars.
That's another one, I think, on the One Show when they had Benedict Cumberbatch on, and it came up as Benedict Couple Beer Batch, which makes sense.
Yeah, well, I'd be proud of that one.
And my all-time favourite, because I've made a study of this, I say I've made a study, I've just Googled it, but this is what I knew already. Rhino porn is the world's most expensive commodity.
Rhino porn?
Rhino porn, yeah, is the world's most expensive commodity. I presume it was horn.
Oh, rhino horn,
I presume it was horn. And there's loads, actually. There's one about chroma crabs, where they swap the B for a P, which obviously lends a very different meaning to the... And the Chinese year of the whores, as opposed to the horse.
Oh, yes.
Where did you do it?
There was another one at the Queen Mother's funeral. And now we're going to have a minute's violence.
I could do this all day. This is my sense of humour in a blinking nutshell, Phil. But I presume when you're responsible for it, it's a bit of a belly drop moment. It's a bit of a...
It is. Yeah. And you need PTSD treatment after a particularly bad incident.
But I have to ask you anyway, qualifications?
I was a subtitler. For 28 years, I was a subtitler.
Crikey. How'd you get into it?
It started off working for a little charity up north, where I'm from, and then subtitling videos for deaf school children, educational resources and stuff. And then the next thing is, if you find yourself in London at Oracle and then Channel 4 and stuff, and then BBC.
Well, that's perfect. I think we're knocking at the door of another. How many subtitlers would there be working at any one time, roughly?
God knows. God knows. I mean, I've been out of it for about over 10 years now. Subtitling it's done all over the world. I mean, people do it in their back rooms in all over the world for the television or for various other reasons. Because there's film subtitling as well.
Of course, there is. Some friends of mine actually were living in Budapest many years ago during having a gap year between school and university. And they were asked to do the subtitles, English subtitles for a Hungarian language film. And they inserted two completely made up figures of speech. So I can't remember what they were, but something like raining cats and dogs, except it was, raining pigs and poodles or something like that. I don't know whether it ever, because obviously what you want is for it to go all the way around Hungary and then for someone to actually say it to you in English, because they also did teaching English as a foreign language. I love that. Phil, what a lovely answer, mate. Have a round of applause.
Thanks very much.
No, thank you very
much.
I love that. Cheers, mate. Take care. So subtitles down, Sudoku down, spiders and accents still on the board. Accents being a particularly interesting question, not entirely unlinked to that last one, is can you tell by a facial movement the accent that someone is using? And I guess if you can, then you can answer it. Tim Humphrey is here now with your headlines.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:34. Spiders, do they die if you chuck them out the bedroom window? And accents, is there a way of having a fair old punt at what someone's accent is, even if you can't hear them talking because of the way their facial muscles behave? Phil is... I don't think we should have put Phil through. It's just going to make everyone feel awful, isn't it? Also, is there any way possibly... This has happened once before in real life. I don't know if you were listening earlier. We got a joke to go all the way around the world. A joke not at the expense of, but involving an Australian journalist. And the Australian journalist, because of Twitter and radio sort of marrying each other, the Australian journalist responded to the joke about an hour ago. You had to be there. But we did once have a call from where Phil is, followed immediately by a call, I think, from Wroxham, which, as regular listeners will know, is on the Norfolk Broads. And so if I were to say David Bowie at this point, you would be able to work out where Phil was calling from, because we went directly from where Phil is calling from to the Norfolk Broads, which, if you're even half a David Bowie fan, you should already be nodding in a knowing fashion about where Phil is calling from. It's Hunky Dory, isn't it? It's on the Hunky Dory album. No? God, I've never seen so many blank faces in one place before. From Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. You know the song, Phil, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. How exciting.
Can you imagine anybody not knowing? But we haven't got anyone from Wroxham on the other line. Can we try and find somebody? See, just speak to me. Just bear with me one moment, Phil. I'll be right back in a minute. We've got Woking,
fair enough.
Woking, Reading, Isle of Wight, Purley, Edinburgh, Wembley, Dorchester. We haven't even got anyone who can pretend they're on the Norfolk Broads. So we want kind of Wroxham and places like that. Try and get me a caller from the Norfolk Broads, all right? Keep a couple of phone lines free and then I can do my great joke. Anyway, Phil's in Ibiza. Phil, I don't think you should have rung in. I think you're rubbing it in a bit for the rest of us.
My bad, as I say, my bad.
Hang on a minute. I've just got to deal with some office politics. It's not the Northern Broads. It's Norfolk Broads. I'm not going to repeat the second syllable of that word now loudly in order to make the point that it's not the Northern Broads, it's the...
Wake up to the sound of waves. Look out at spectacular coastal views and sip aromatic coffee on your very own veranda. At Parkdean Resorts, we have more than 60 stunning parks for you to choose from in fabulous locations right across the UK. From the dramatic beauty of Scotland to the sunshine coast of Essex and the wonders of the Isle of Wight. Make this summer the best one yet with your own holiday home. Inquire about the incredible offers we have available by searching Parkdean Resorts Ownership today.
Norfolk Broads, because that would get me into all sorts of trouble with Ofcom. There are no Northern Broads. Well, I mean, apart from Coronation Street, I suppose, stuff like... Anyway, I'll stop now. Phil, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Let's go. Carry on, mate.
So, balls. I was thinking mainly about snooker balls. Back in the day, how did they make them so perfectly round when there wasn't any laser technology or anything like we'd have today? Or also, it would be you think about ball bearings as well that they'd use in tanks, like back in the day. How did they make them so perfectly round?
It'd be something to do with lathes. Actually, because this is actually a Black Country question. A pal of mine's dad, or a pal of mine, or a pal of my dad's, all of the above, used to be one very big in ball bearings. Long before late. No, well, I was born in 1972, so the whatchamathingies would not be laser-based. I think a lathe is going to deliver a perk, because a properly set up lathe is going to... Well, I don't know why I'm trying to answer this question. I couldn't be less qualified, but I think that will be involved in the answer. But how did they, back in the day, and billiards and snooker goes back, you know, a couple of hundred years, and if it wasn't a perfect ball, as it were, then the game would be an absolute waste of time, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I like that. Let's try and find out.
I'm not sure about the lathe theory.
No, I'm not sure I do either. I wish I'd never said it out loud, to be honest with you, Phil. What's the score in Ibiza at the moment? I presume you live there, because it'd be hard to get there on holiday at the minute. How long have you... Oh, you...
It's very, very clement with regards to the vaccines or the bars. Or...
No, just sort of holiday-type scenarios when the rest of us are stuck here.
It's quiet. Obviously, the British aren't here, which is making a big impact, but business is just trying to get along as best they can.
What line are you in?
What
line are you in, if you don't mind me asking?
I actually launched a company over here, which we do silent discos.
Okay.
So it's all outdoor, safe, and...
Living the dream. Living the dream.
Social distance, but still enjoy a bit of a rave.
Living the dream. And do I detect a slight Midlands twang there as well, or am I imagining that?
Possibly.
I thought you might. So you might have known the lathe question yourself, you say. Never mind.
Boris Chardis.
Just a Boris Chardis.
Boris Chardis.
Oh, kid.
More game.
It was all right, Babs. Phil, look after yourself, mate. I was doing that. I was stringing out the conversation, partly because it was enjoyable and partly to give the producer a chance to actually find me a caller from the Norfolk Broads. A caller here. I live in Tooting, says John, and I'm from Timperley. Even I've heard of Roy's of Wroxham. You may have heard of Roy's of Wroxham, John in Tooting from Timperley, but it actually begins with W, not R. Anyway, as David Bowie almost wrote, from Ibiza to Reading. Bob's in Reading. Bob, question or answer?
Hello there. Question, please.
Thank you, Bob. What is it? Rob. Rob, it, not Bob. Sorry. I bet you hate that. No, you do mind. Don't be shy.
It's a word. I don't mind.
No, cool. Rob, then, in Reading. Rob's in Reading.
In terms of ease of digestion and nutrition gained from the food, is hot food better than cold food? Because when I eat leftovers straight out the fridge, so chili, jambalaya, things like that, my girlfriend is horrified that I don't warm it up.
Really?
Yes.
On what ground?
She says it's bad for you.
Oh, okay.
But obviously it's not mouldy.
No, of course.
It's typically less than a day old because I don't let my food hang around that long.
Ah, for sure.
If you've, all things being equal, is hot food better for you than cold food? Is it easier to...
Is that the question you want? Or do you want the way to win the argument with your girlfriend? The question of is it in any way bad for you to eat cold food.
No, I'm fairly sure that even if I was right,
it wouldn't
I would
matter.
Be wrong.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Sounds like one of my books. okay, so is there a difference in terms of benefit, health, between eating it hot and eating it cold? And we're obviously talking about food that can be eaten both ways.
Yes, exactly. It's not, you know, super unusual types of food, but... Yeah, if you can eat it hot or cold, is it better for you?
No, I love that. Yeah, so does it get digested quicker? And what you did, I think I'd lean towards the idea that the hotter food would get digested more quickly, because I imagine the process of digestion involving acid is somehow exothermic, and that heat making stuff up again. Rob, leave it with me. Hot or cold food, is it better for you in terms of digestion and absorption and all the other biological stuff? Bradley's in Leicester. Bradley, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The subtitles.
We've kind of done that.
Yeah, it's just to basically expand on, pick up one of the points he said and expand on it. So he said that you can't use a live speech to text for multiple people, but you can.
Okay. He did knock it on the head a while ago, to be honest with you. 23 years, man and boy in the industry, but he hadn't been doing it for a while, so there might have been changes since he hung up his headphones.
Yeah, so maybe this is something that's being researched quite a lot at the moment. So I've got an app that I've used in meetings a few times where we've had five or six people in the meetings, and this will record and just give you a live speech to text. It'll print out to the screen. It'll say person one, person two, and then you can go through afterwards and just input all the names. In this app, I think you'll love the name of this app. The one I've got is called Otter.
Yes, I know. We mentioned that earlier. Isn't that a magical little moment of planets aligning? Yeah. But is that transcribing software, Bradley? It's not subtitling for television.
Well, there's no reason you couldn't use it for subtitling.
You might say that, and I might agree, but neither of us can go definitive on that. You're talking about software that's designed to transcribe meetings. You're not talking about subtitling. Because subtitling can't risk, because I've used the software you describe, and it does make mistakes.
Yeah, so do people, as you said before.
No, they do, but there'll be a reason why they're not using this software in the way that you describe yet, because it's still under development and improving, I think.
Yeah, so the way the software works then is using signal processing algorithms and machine learning. So you can take a recording of someone's voice and do a frequency analysis, so look at the actual frequency points. Each person has kind of like a fingerprint, which is individual to each person. But they'll follow a similar pattern.
It takes a long time, I'm told. For full-on subtitling, because I heard from a pal who's actually in the industry. So you speak word for word for the broadcast and the computer transcribes it. But it takes several months for the computer to learn his voice perfectly, if you see what I mean.
Learning, you say life begins at a million samples. You take, for example, a million samples of an apple, different apples, and show that to the machine learning, and then they'll show it a banana and say, is this an apple? And it'll say, no, hopefully. More and more samples you get, the better and better it gets.
Qualifications?
I've got a degree in signal processing.
That'll do. Round of applause for Bradley. That was an embellishment rather than a correction, an improvement, or just some extra stuff. So there's a few words I say weirdly, and the computer would need to recognise them. Why are you nodding? Because I'd say cigarette weird, or are you cigarette? Computer, I say quite weirdly. From instead of from. My dad used to tell me off for that. From stuck. I don't know why. Other things as well. We've all got odd little pronunciation idiosyncrasies, haven't we? Or idiosyncrasies, as Keith says. Jim's in Dorchester. Jim, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Jim.
How many weapons, or I'm talking about nuclear weapons, or fissionable material has been unaccounted for? You know, in the last 60 years, there's been all sorts of ballistic missile treaties between the US and Russia. But after the wall came down, you know, I guess part of 30 years ago, and the destruction of Eastern Europe as a part of the Soviet Union, and then latterly the treaties that have attempted to count weapons seem to have gone nowhere. So anybody have an idea as to how much fissionable material or nuclear weapons are unaccounted for?
We'll just confine it to nuclear weapons, yeah?
Yeah.
Because then, I mean, that's easier to count. I've read too many thrillers in my life, Jim, because there is an absolutely brilliant one a really, really brilliant one about this and about how, it's not going to come, but it was superb and it was exactly what you describe. It was decommissioning and like some dodgy business, and then someone got killed, and then someone found the paperwork, and then they went back, I think, to Siberia or somewhere like that. So I hope that's enough clues for someone to tell us what the book was. But my goodness me, it was an absolute humdinger. We'll find out. Why do you want to know? Well, I mean, are you in the market for one? I might know a bloke. Keith probably knows someone.
You know, it doesn't look like the Russians and the Americans are getting on very well now. And, you know, over the years, the unaccountability of it is supposed to be underscored by the weapons treaties,
of course.
But it's not. So it's a difficult question to answer because clearly they're going to keep it quiet. But, you know, particularly if they've gone and lost weapons. But
and rogue states as well that may have or may not have developed them, you know, and we shall find out. I like that. Well, we won't find out. We'll ask and we will hopefully find out. How many nuclear weapons have gone missing? 03456060973. Or if you can answer this version of the question, I will add it to the list because I'm in charge and I can. Have any nuclear weapons gone missing? I only need evidence of one, personally, to be interested. But I'd love to know the total, as Jim is asking, but equally the reality, as I am asking. 12:46 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
10 to 1? No. Keith, check the clock. Tony's in Canada. Tony, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Eggs, James. When you go to a supermarket, you can buy eggs with double yolks.
Yes, you
How
can.
How do they know that they have double yolks inside?
I know this. Do you know? How long have you been listening to the programme, Tony?
A couple of years.
Okay, so you won't know this. Back in the day, you'll probably find this very hard to believe. I used to be an insufferable show-off, Tony.
Never.
No, seriously. And in the early days of Mystery Hour, I would regularly answer about 8 questions myself on the programme. I don't know why. I don't know why it changed. I presume my natural modesty just assumed more and more control of my on-air persona. But I'm going to answer this one myself because I wondered it and I found out. And it may have popped up on here before or it may not, but it's a bright light.
Well, it was actually my 10-year-old son who wants to know because he eats his breakfast and we got some double yolks.
It's such a result, isn't it?
Why.
Well, you got double yolks because you bought a box of double yolks.
Well, yes, but then we bought single yolks and the whole box had double yolks.
Shut up. That is magical breakfast moments, isn't it? That really is. I love that. I love a double yolk. And the answer is a really bright light so you can see through the shell. And then I think, presumably, the farmers can... If a chicken has a particular propensity for laying double yolks, then they'll do a little... I don't know, I'll just shut up. They shine a really bright light through the egg is the short answer to how they can tell it's got a double yolk. But I presume that they do a little bit of, you know, what's it? You know, that thing, the fancy stuff, like genetic, not manipulation, but, you know, like breeding. So they'll get them to mate with each other and they'll whatever. But a bright light, to be sure... before they'd stick it in the box marked double yoker. What's your boy's name?
Charlie.
Charlie, there you go, mate. An excellent question. You don't have to laugh, Tony. You don't have to laugh, mate. Have a round of applause for me. Oh, excellent. Regards to Charlie as well. Tell him to keep asking difficult questions because he's 10 now. By the time he's 12, you're going to be really putting your dad on the spot. Joe's in Bristol. Joe, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Joe.
How do cats cool down when it's hot? I mean, they don't sweat because they're covered in fur. They can't take the fur off.
Yeah.
It's lying around in the sun all day. They don't pant.
You mean like a dog does? Well, how do you cool down when it's hot?
Well, I sweat.
Yeah.
Sweat evaporates.
The cats
cool
not...
down that way.
Well, they shed. They do actually take their coat off, Clever Clogs, don't they? They shed. We've got a kitten at home and she's already shedding.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but they
that
can't,
part
they still
of
lie
it.
Around in the sun all day or they lie on the radiators at night time and...
No, but I mean, I don't know that there is an answer to your question. I've given you one example of something that cats do in order to not get as hot as they would do otherwise in hot weather. But you're looking more for do they drink more water or do they have a kind of some sort of invisible panting type process? Yeah, it's a good question. Also, they quite like the heat, I think, cats, in a way that dogs tend not to sometimes. I don't know whether that might be relevant.
Yeah, but they must cool down I don't know, do they lose their cognitive ability when they get too hot, like you do?
Lazy
you
little,
can't think when you get too
lazy
hot.
Little things, aren't they? Well, speak for yourself, mate. Speak for yourself. I'll find out. What do cats do to cool down? There's a call for cats gag here, but I can never do the clever stuff by the time we've gone past the 12:30 junction. So if I squeeze, no, nothing. I've got nothing. How do cats cool down? Do cats cool down? Do cats have any biological characteristics that allow them to lower their body temperature in a way that a dog will pant? Vance is in Regent's Park. Vance, question or answer?
Answer to the spider question.
Good man, carry on.
Okay, the answer is that the ratio of the body weight to volume is critical for spiders falling. Spiders are not very aerodynamic, they're covered in little hairs, and that means that there's lots of air resistance as they fall, and usually that saves them. But if it's a very heavy spider,
yes,
like a tarantula, then that body weight, that excess body weight, can cause them to be injured. But of course, they're also protected by having an exoskeleton, and that's very resilient. So generally, spiders will survive being thrown out of the bedroom window.
And indeed, Sarah in Nebworth, I think it was Sarah, my apologies if I misremember, did respond somewhat dismissively to my suggestion that a tarantula probably would die on the perfectly reasonable grounds, Vance, that there are no tarantulas in Nebworth, as far as we're aware, certainly not in her daughter's bedroom.
Yes, so, well, that's another matter. So, and thank you very much for answering the double yolk question. We go to Waitrose every Saturday, and my partner is fanatic about getting double yolks, and will take a bright light with us in future.
Are you serious? Well, great. It's, actually, I can tell you what it's called as well, if you really want to show off. It's called candling. Candling.
Oh,
candling.
Right.
Hey, so you're going to be what are you going to do this weekend? I'm going candling in Waitrose.
Candling in Waitrose.
Round of applause to add to the jollity, Vance. Thank you very much. Well, lovely answer. So, yeah, I mean, within the parameters of the question, a spider likely to be found in a UK household and expelled from a reasonably plausible window, the spider would, for the reasons Vance just perfectly explained, not die. Alex is in Leeds. Alex, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, Alex.
Yeah, just to the question about how do cats cool down?
All right.
So unlike dogs, they don't pant, and they have various ways of keeping cool, grooming their fur, using saliva and things like that, going in the shade. But there's another way, which is they expel heat through their ears.
Oh, really?
Apparently so.
Gosh.
The reason I know this is because I am the owner of two cats, and before I was just doing some research because, as I said, unlike dogs, they don't necessarily pant, and not obviously anyway. So one of the ways is through their ears.
That makes sense because they've got particularly big ears, and they are the least furry part of the cat, apart from the pads of their paws, which are called beans.
So that's my understanding.
Can you at least pretend to be impressed by my little knowledge drop there?
I am impressed.
Thank you. Honestly, I'm used to being ignored, but not actually live on the radio. It's usually I wait till I get home before I fall down the list. That's quite old.
Stunned into silence.
Give him a round of applause, quick. That makes sense. I love it. Sarah is in Warminster. Sarah, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's about the cats.
Okay.
How do they stay cool?
We've done everything except the accents, I think, have we, on this one? No, what
sorry?
Else is there? What, hang on, just bear with me one moment, sorry. Oh, and the balls. Yeah, how do you do the perfect balls and the hot and cold food? Anyway, I don't think we're going to get time for them. We'll squeeze this one in quickly, Sarah. What would you want to say? Sorry.
It is through the ears partially because the blood vessels in the ear are so close to the surface,
yeah.
So that's a way. But it's that they also sweat through their paws and the pads.
Oh, they do sweat through their paws and their beans.
Yeah,
their beans.
They do. Because if you've got a hot day and your cat's walking along the cold kitchen floor or something or on tiles, you can see the paw prints of sweaty feet. And also they do pant, but only if they've got heat stroke.
Oh, blind boy. So that's a sign. I think I might know the answer to the next question, judging by the depth of your expertise. What are your qualifications, Sarah?
I'm a veterinary nurse.
A round of applause for Sarah.
Oh, wow. I'm so
great.
Oh,
great answer, though. I don't know why you're so chuffed. We're a pleasure to have you here. It's our privilege. Squeezing one more if we're quick, because Sheila Fogarty is poised. Mark's in Waltham Forest. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, to the food question.
Carry on.
So basically, the more processes you put food through, the less nutrition you get out of it. So raw food is, raw food is better. You get more out of it. And the more processes you put it through,
The more the nutrients disappear, which is why the more process. I guess I'm going to give you a round of, well, your qualifications first.
I'll just read it in the Sunday Times.
I'll do nicely. I think we probably should have clarified the question more. I think he was asking about cooked food that's gone cold. Is it better to eat when it's hot, or is it better to eat after it's gone cold? But, I mean, it's his fault he wasn't clear. He's not going to deprive you of a round of applause, is he, Mark?
No, I'll take a round of applause for that, James. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Here it is. Make sure you keep the receipt. That's it from me for another day. We'll do it all again tomorrow from 10. The next voice you hear on LBC will belong to Sheila Fogarty.
And calm. A slightly hysterical ending to the programme.
Back in the room.
Thanks very much, James. From three today, the World Health Organization says women of childbearing age, so that's what, age 13 to 50, shouldn't drink alcohol at all, ever. And people say having a womb has no real bearing on your life. Well, yes, it does. And here is just one example. So we'll talk about that at three. At two, a quarter of UK pupils attend schools where air pollution is over the World Health Organization limit. Them again. Should we have tighter restrictions on cars outside schools and around schools? And I'm going to start, though, by talking about working from home, if you can. It's still government advice. But should remote working become a legal employment right? There are those who say it absolutely must, and it absolutely will.
Heard about Magpie, the vegan pie truck that needed a bit of help from GoDaddy. One day the owners are like, this business hasn't reached its potential. And the other one goes, we need a bigger piece of the pie. And then it hits us. We need GoDaddy. Look, we can get a domain name and create an online store so we can sell to more customers. Now they've gone from serving a couple of pies to flogging nationwide. And now everyone's like,
vegan pies are the new thing around here.
Wait, no meat! For the help and tools you need to grow online, GoDaddy.